Good evening, everyone. This is Steve Santisiro, your state senator here in the 10th District in Bucks County. I'm coming to you from Harrisburg this evening, where we are in session this week. Welcome to our telephone town hall. We are in the process of dialing out right now to add people to this call. So we'll be getting underway in just a moment. But before we do, I just wanted to give you a couple of pointers as you participate tonight. When you want to ask a question, you need to dial zero on your phone, dial zero, and you will be connected to us to ask a question live this evening. We anticipate, as has been the case in the past, that we'll have quite a few listeners on the line tonight and therefore quite a few calls. We do our best to try to get to every question that our listeners have, but invariably there are some that we can't get to because we're only budgeted an hour for this evening's call. So to the extent that you're not able to get through, then what we ask you to do is stay on the line at the conclusion of the call, and you'll have an opportunity to leave your question behind at that point. And then in the next couple of days, we will make sure that you get an answer to that. So again, dial zero to be connected this evening. Once more, this is Steve Santisiro, your state senator here in the 10th District in Bucks County, with our first telephone town hall of 2022. And I'm happy to cover a variety of issues tonight. For the first time in a long time, actually, we don't have any guests with us tonight. I'll just be fielding your questions and giving you an update from Harrisburg. We're going to cover a number of different topics. One of those, of course, would be COVID and where we are with COVID and the case numbers in our area and in the state. We're also going to be talking a little bit about the current process for redistricting both state legislative and congressional lines. I'll give you an update on where that stands. A little bit about the voting process and a number of related issues there. We'll talk about some of the investment projects happening in the 10th District in Bucks County, give you an update on that. And then obviously any questions that you have on any topic, we're happy to address. So with that, why don't we start with a little bit of an update on COVID and where things stand at the moment. So the good news is that throughout Pennsylvania, and specifically in our region in the southeast and in Bucks County, the case numbers have been coming down over the last couple of weeks since we peaked about 2 weeks ago with the Omicron variant. Just to give you an idea of that, about 2 weeks ago, Pennsylvania was experiencing over 30,000 cases a day, new cases a day, driven largely, they folks believe, by the Omicron variant. That number fell to about 16,000 a week ago, and now we are at about 10,000 as of yesterday. So the numbers are coming down, and of course, that is good news. It's what a lot of the experts predicted because it's kind of what happened in South Africa, which is where the Omicron variant first surfaced back in November. Meanwhile, our numbers on vaccinations are increasing, especially people who have been boosted. I can tell you that in Bucks County, right now we have nearly 378,000 fully vaccinated residents. That's up by about 2,500 people from the previous week, and about 158,000 people have been boosted with that third booster shot. So, of course, that's really good news because what we know is that while the vaccines may not prevent you from getting COVID-19, what they do is prevent you in almost all cases from getting a severe illness that requires a hospital stay and would require some kind of more significant intervention. So it protects you from that. It protects you from dying. And, of course, that is the main goal of the vaccination program. So I just want to put a plug in once again for the vaccines. They're completely safe. In fact, you could say that these COVID vaccines have been more thoroughly vetted than any vaccine in history, given the number of people worldwide who have been vaccinated at this point. I myself have been vaccinated. I've had a booster shot as well. Once more, I really urge you, if you've not yet had an opportunity to get vaccinated, please do that. If you have had your either one dose of Johnson & Johnson or two doses of either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccines, that you get a booster shot as well. Couple of things to talk about in that regard in just a minute, but before we do that, I just want to remind everyone to connect this evening to ask a question directly live online. You need to press zero on your phone. Zero on your phone connects you tonight, and we'd be happy to answer your questions live on the line. Now, a few things about the vaccine real quick, just to say that you can still get your vaccines. You know, most pharmacies have them. In some cases, they'll ask you to schedule an appointment to get a vaccine. But you can also get them at mass vaccination centers. One that is close by for us in the 10th District is at the Neshaminy Mall, and that center is open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and you can walk right in. You don't need an appointment for that. So, again, I urge you to get your vaccines if you haven't yet had a chance to do that. Now, let's see if we do have anyone on the line. Again, press zero and you'll be connected on the phone. Yeah, go ahead. All right, our first, looks like our first caller is Lisa. Lisa, you are on the line. Lisa, you're on the line. This is Steve Sanicero. Do you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, hi.
Okay, great. How are you? Good evening. Go ahead and ask your question.
It's kind of a twofold question.
Sure.
I wanted to know, you know, with the recent scandals about voter or electoral fraud, the fake electors being sending documents about Trump winning. Did
right.
that happen in Pennsylvania? And is there anything, you know, going on to correct the situation if it did happen in Pennsylvania, like in Michigan and Wisconsin and Arizona?
Right. Right.
That's the first part of the question.
Okay, Lisa. Let me answer that first, and I'll let you answer the second part. Ask the second question.
Okay.
So to answer your question, there were a number of, and for the other listeners, in case they're not aware of this, there were a number of states where Republicans fielded alternative electors to the electors for Joe Biden. Those are states that Joe Biden won. And notwithstanding that fact, Republican electors executed elector documents that stated that they were correct electors for their state. Now, that, of course, was wrong. And my understanding is the Justice Department is looking into that as possible criminal behavior. Here in Pennsylvania, the Republican electors signed a document that was similar but slightly different. And it said that that they would be the electors if they prevailed in the court cases that were then pending in various courts in the state. Initially, I know that Attorney General Josh Shapiro, our Attorney General here in Pennsylvania, took a look at that and concluded that because of that conditional statement that they would not be prosecuted by his office. So that's the answer to your first question. Now, your second question?
Yeah, as far as Republicans creating new laws to curtail voter rights in Pennsylvania, I'm really concerned about voter rights for everyone, and I just want to know, are they submitting new laws to do that, and what are we doing about it?
Right. Well, first of all, let me say, Lisa, that I share your concerns about limiting people's rights to vote. I think everyone should have access to vote and access to the polls, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent, no matter what your ideology is, everyone should have an opportunity to vote. There are various bills that are circulating in the state legislature that, in my view, would curtail people's rights to vote. And I do not support those. I know, you know, there are some folks who want to do away with mail-in voting, for example. I think the last 2 years prove that our mail-in voting system works and it works well. Rather than do things like that and make it harder for people to vote, what we should be doing here in Pennsylvania is making access to voting much easier. So, for example, I believe that we should have true early voting at various locations in every county to make it easier for people to vote early if that's what they prefer. I think we should make Election Day a holiday, frankly. I mean, I think we should make it easy so that people don't have to worry about, you know, going to work and not being able to vote as a consequence of that. I have a bill that would increase the number of drop boxes where people could take their mail-in ballot and drop it off in a secure way over the numbers that are currently in place. And I think that would be another way to encourage people to vote and make it easier for people to vote. And that's really what we ought to be doing. You know, some of the legislation we've seen passed in some states like Georgia and Texas and others, I think are kind of inconsistent with the idea that we want to make it easier for people to vote. So, Lisa, I want to thank you for being on tonight, and I'd like to take another call right now. So thank you. Take care.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Okay, then star, once again, zero, just press zero on your phone and you'll be connected. Next up is Richard. Richard, this is Steve Sanicero. You're live on the line. How are you this evening?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Go ahead, Richard. My main concern, pardon?
What's your question?
Yeah, my question concerns gerrymandering. Now, there was several House bills. Like, I think one was 2207, and there was House Bill 38 regarding gerrymandering. I'm wondering what's going on, so you know we don't get involved with the you know testing all our votes and everything like that. And gerrymandering needs to be fair. So I'm wondering what happened regarding these bills. Were they passed, not passed, and what is your position about these two bills?
Yeah. So I have to tell you, Richard, since I don't serve in the House, I'm not familiar with all the House bills unless they come to the Senate and they're voted on here. You know, the House has its legislation and the Senate has its. And then, you know, if they get out of the chambers, then they go to the other chamber. And that's where we work on them. What I'll tell you is that there have been various pieces of legislation introduced both recently and in the past that I have supported that would have created an independent citizens commission that would redraw the lines both for the state legislature and Congress. And that's a process, of course, called redistricting that has to happen every 10 years after the census is done. And the state has to look at whether the districts are still more or less equal in population. That legislation, while I have sponsored it, has not passed. There have been attempts to undermine those bills to basically give the legislature a veto over any independent commission, and that's obviously you know undermines the whole purpose. So those have not passed. So what is happening this year, because we are now well into the process, is we have two different tracks that we do here in Pennsylvania under existing law. For the congressional maps, those lines are done as part of a piece of legislation that is passed by the legislature and then ultimately signed by the governor. I can tell you with that process, a bill has been passed that is not bipartisan. It was supported by the Republican majorities in the House and Senate. But those of us on the Democratic side did not support it because we believed that the proposed lines were gerrymandered to favor the Republicans and not really a fair map that would give, you know, make more competitive districts. So I think the governor, and the governor has said he's going to veto it, so that map will likely be vetoed. Meanwhile, there is a pending related case in the Commonwealth Court, which is the intermediate appellate court here in Pennsylvania. And what will likely happen is the Commonwealth Court judge will pick a map among several that have been suggested by the four different caucuses, in each chamber, Democrats and Republicans. And then that map, there will likely be an appeal of that to the state Supreme Court. So ultimately, the state Supreme Court will likely choose the new congressional map, and we'll likely know the answer to that question sometime perhaps in February. It's not clear at the moment exactly what that time schedule will be. On the state side, it's a different process. There is a five-member commission made up of four of them are the leaders of the Democratic and Republican leaders in the House and the Senate, and then the fifth is a person who is chosen by the state Supreme Court. That person is Chairman Nordenberg, a former chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh. And that commission, that five-member commission now, has been working on new state legislative maps for the better part of the last 8-9 months or so. It issued a preliminary map. Excuse me? It issued a preliminary map back in December. And it's going to be voting on a final map now after receiving public comment this Friday. Once that final map is voted on, that will begin a 30-day period where it can be challenged in court. And then by the 28th of February, that time will wind up. And then the state Supreme Court will make a decision, which will likely happen sometime in the first or second week of March. So that's the process that we have right now in Pennsylvania. So I hope that answered your questions, Richard. And now we're going to move on to the next call. Again, please dial 0 to be connected this evening. Okay, the next person on the line is Lewis.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm actually going to ask about a House bill, 979.
Okay.
Yep.
And 979. That was just in front of us this evening, actually.
Excellent.
Go ahead. Yep.
There is a bloodbath in Philadelphia, and the overwhelming majority of the homicides in Philadelphia and the large cities are with illegal firearms.
Right.
This bill is to prevent cities from making their own laws to regulate firearms within their city lines.
Right, right.
And it's so that the state can control the laws.
Right.
Are you for this, against it, and why?
All right. So I voted against that bill this evening when it came up in the state Senate. I have been an opponent of that bill many times in the past, even back when I was a member of the state House representing the Yardley, Newtown, Morrisville area, Bucks County. That bill has been around that long. It's been around for a good 10 years now. And the reason why I oppose it is because for two things. You described part of it, which is that it would seek to preempt any attempt by local governments like the city of Philadelphia or, for that matter, any town in Bucks County from passing any local ordinance that would regulate gun ownership. And the idea behind that piece of the bill is that state law should preempt local ordinances, and if those local ordinances are inconsistent with state law, then they should be preempted. I don't know that you need to pass a bill to say that, because that is the law of the state already. If there is an inconsistent local law, state law prevails. And that's the same concept we have in our federal system, you know, in under the United States Constitution or a federal law. If a state tries to pass a law inconsistent with federal law, then it's invalidated. The other piece of the bill, though, that goes even further and I think is really problematic is it gives something called standing to private organizations to sue towns. Standing is a legal term that essentially means that a party has the ability to bring a lawsuit. Usually it's because the party has some kind of an interest that the law recognizes. In this case, what the bill would do is – would create standing where it doesn't already exist to give groups like the National Rifle Association the ability to sue towns that pass gun violence prevention legislation. So, for example, if Doylestown Borough were to pass a law that forbade people from carrying firearms in children's playgrounds, this bill would, if it became law, would enable the NRA to then sue Doylestown Borough to have that law rescinded. And I think rather than pass legislation like this, what we really should be doing, if Harrisburg isn't going to act to pass reasonable gun violence legislation like my universal background check bill, for example, then we should allow municipalities like Doylestown, like Philadelphia, to pass local legislation that will protect its citizens. Because you're right, there is a gun violence epidemic happening right now, not just in Philly, but in many other places in the state and in the country, for that matter. And there is a lot more we can do to prevent illegal guns from getting into the wrong hands. And bills like this do not help local officials to try to take those efforts. So thank you very much for that. Again, dial zero to be connected this evening. Once more, this is Steve Santacero, your state senator here in the 10th District of Bucks County. Happy to answer your questions tonight. So we're going to go back to the lines now, and we have Robin on the line. Robin, go ahead. Robin, are you on
the line? Good evening. How are you this evening?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good. Just a question. I'm a member, a 50-year member of Point Pleasant Fire Company over here in Plumstead Township. And
thank you for serving. And that's
well, you're welcome.
Quite a record.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah,
in my blood. Yeah. Barb, I don't know what I know. The last couple of years with the COVID, the revenues in the state have been kind of off and on and all over the place. But our roads over here in Bucks County are atrocious.
Right.
And I was wondering, you know, for the amount of tax we put in liquid fuels per gallon of gas that we buy, you know, in the Tri-County area, Bucks County's roads, especially in northern and central Bucks, are just terrible.
Yep.
I was just wondering if there was anything that in District 6 here that anything coming up that might infuse some road work in this area as far as what we need.
Well, Robin, I am you're preaching to the choir on this. Okay. I'm glad you raised the issue because it's really an important one. And you may know that I just initiated what I call a pothole reporter on my website to get folks to respond. To let us know where they see problems in their areas so that we can get that to Region 6, which is our local PennDOT region, and get the potholes fixed at least, you know, right away. And this time of year, of course, with winter and a lot of the freezing and the salt and all those things, we see a lot more of those types of degradations to the road. But longer term, what we need to do, and I know this is what you're getting at, is pave those roads. And in the 3 years now that I've served as state senator for the 10th district, I have really been pushing District 6 to get out there and pave the roads that are the state roads anyway that are in greatest need of repair. Toward that end, before the pandemic struck, I actually took a number of this District 6 engineers out on a road tour. We got in a van and we drove, you know, throughout your area and throughout all of the 10th district to show them the ones that really needed the most help right away. And that did start to get a number of projects put on their docket, and they are moving forward with those. But there's a lot more that needs to be done. Now, the good news is, of course, the federal government just passed President Biden's infrastructure bill, and that is going to pump about $4.5 billion into Pennsylvania over the course of the next 5 years for road and bridge projects. It's a lot of money, but honestly, it's we need to do more because we have right now a need of about another $1.5 to $2 billion a year to fund all the outstanding road and bridge projects in Pennsylvania. So we in the state need to find revenue to deal with those things. Now, we have about $7 billion in reserve from the American Rescue Plan that was passed by Congress and signed by the president earlier back in 2021 that the state hasn't used yet. And my view is that a good piece of the, a good chunk of that money should be put into these types of projects. One, because it will, you know, make our areas more attractive for business investment. Two, it's for road safety, obviously, and will, you know, help us keep our cars from breaking down and having to be realigned or break an axle or whatever could happen because of the poorly paved roads. And three, at the end of the day, it'll create jobs. And that's something, you know, that we obviously want to be able to do in the construction industry, which is why I supported Act 89 back in 2013, which is the current bill that funds a lot of our new road projects here in Pennsylvania. So we could take some of that ARP money and put that into, you know, critical road and bridge projects, in addition to the money that we're getting from the federal government from the infrastructure plan. And, you know, you can be sure that I will be a very loud advocate for making sure that that investment comes to our district, because I learned a long time ago as a state legislator that the old adage that we all learn as kids, which is the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I will be the squeaky wheel. I'm going to continue to be that. So you'll see me out there, especially when the spring comes around and we get past – hopefully we get past this pandemic once and for all. I'll be back with the engineers from PennDOT to make sure that we get a lot of these roads on the list. If it's a local road. Hey, this is Steve Sanicero again. I'm sorry about that, but we got disconnected. Not sure what happened there, but as I said, we're in Harrisburg and something malfunctioned with our equipment, so I apologize for that. We are going to go back to the phones, dial zero to be connected to the call tonight, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. Again, dial zero, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. Who do we have next on the line? It looks like we have Don. Don, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. I almost hung up because I thought the thing disconnected.
Yeah, well, it disconnected on my end, not yours, so I apologize.
Well, I know it didn't hang up, so I figured I'll hang out a little bit.
All right, sounds good.
So how are you doing this evening other than the technical gremlin?
Well, other than that, I can't complain, and if that's the worst thing that happens to me and everyone else today, then, you know, we'll count ourselves lucky.
Good. I had two questions. The first one deals, I know you're a senator, but with what's currently what's listed as a House bill regarding Supreme Court, the amendment to the state constitution. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that bill that would now regionalize the justices as opposed to being statewide.
Yeah, that's what we refer to as the judicial gerrymandering bill.
Okay. Well, yeah. My other question is also on gerrymandering, but we'll get
there. Okay. Well, I'll answer the Supreme Court question first. Actually, the proposal is not just for the Supreme Court, but all the appellate courts in Pennsylvania at the state level, because they all get right now elected statewide. My concern with that is that what the proposals would have the state legislature drawing these new districts where the judges and justices would be elected. And that obviously opens itself up to gerrymandering, right? So the problem there is if the state legislature is drawing those lines, they could obviously draw them in a way that favors one party over the other. And, you know, what we should be doing actually is going away from that type of a system where either party could be gerrymandering either legislative lines or any other type, rather than going toward it. And this would simply expand gerrymandering, not do something to stop it. So I'm opposed to that. I think this current system is fine. We have a system here in Pennsylvania where these appellate court judges get elected on a statewide basis. And we have a mix of Democrats and Republicans that get elected to these positions. So it's not like one party dominates over the other. It's pretty even, actually. There are more Republicans at the intermediate appellate level, and there are more Democrats on the state Supreme Court at the moment. But that doesn't mean that running statewide is unfair to either side. It's actually pretty good evidence that it's fair to both sides. So I'm in favor of keeping that system the way it is. You had a second question?
The fact that it's a constitutional amendment, which means the governor can't veto it. Secondly,
yeah.
They also always put these up so that they come to the ballot during the primaries when the fewest
right.
number of voters. Is there anything that can be done to get that to change, that it has to at least be on, when there's a federal election of some form?
Right. Well, I mean, we could amend the Constitution to require it during general elections or higher turnout elections. But, of course, that would require, the constitutional process requires passage in two consecutive sessions by the legislature. There is a troubling trend that I've seen, unfortunately, with the current Republican majorities in the state Senate and the state House to try to amend the Constitution out of frustration of not getting legislation passed because the governor vetoes the legislation. The system we have is very similar to our federal system where, the president can veto a bill from Congress. Well, the governor can veto a bill from the General Assembly. That's part of the checks and balances system. And what that ultimately does is forces both sides to compromise. So the reaction should not be, well, let's just amend the Constitution every year. It should be to let's sit down with the governor and see where we can compromise and, perhaps not get everything we want, but get something that everyone can live with, because really that's how the legislative process is supposed to work. I think it's a troubling trend that we've seen here in Pennsylvania with these proposed constitutional amendments. The one on judicial gerrymandering would have to pass again in this session. It's not been brought up yet. If it gets to the ballot, I can tell you that I, for one, will campaign against it because I think it's a bad idea. So, again, we want to dial zero tonight, dial zero to be connected live on the line. And who do we have next? We are going back to the lines. And, again, dial zero and you will be connected directly tonight. In the meantime, as we're waiting for a caller, there was a question that was submitted ahead of time. What is the current status of the lawsuit to stop voters' private data from being turned over for an audit? You may know that the Pennsylvania Intergovernmental Operations Committee, which is one that I sit on, had a vote back in September to subpoena the voting records of every Pennsylvanian who voted in 2020, there's over 7 million of us who did, from the Department of State. And the records that they're interested in not only would be your name and your address and your phone number, but also the last four digits of your Social Security number, among other things. That information is then going to be turned over to a third-party company, and there's not a lot of transparency in this process of reviewing the records. I have voted against the issuance of that subpoena, and now I am part, along with my Democratic Senate colleagues, in a lawsuit to try to prevent that subpoena from taking effect. And the reason is there are several reasons for that, really. One, first of all, there's no evidence of any widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election, so this is just an unnecessary exercise. Number two, I don't think it's appropriate for personal information, particularly a Social Security number of residents of our state, to go to some third-party company with very little oversight of what that company is going to do with the information. And so far, we've been given very little information about that, and that's troubling. And I think at the end of the day, and I'm hopeful at the end of the day, the courts will side with us and prevent that subpoena from being effective against the Department of State. So happy to go back to the lines now. Dial zero to be connected, and we have Paul. Paul is on the line. Paul, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you, Paul?
Good.
Good.
I just have a question about the unemployment system, the new unemployment system in Pennsylvania. And
yeah.
I'm personally having a very tough time of it. I'm an older guy. I'm 62 years old. Been an operating engineer for 30 years.
Okay.
And,
you know Bob Heenan?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes.
All right.
Great guy.
Great guy. Yep.
Great guy.
Yep.
Great union. And
yep.
I'm having a terrible time. I've been dealing with this since July.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go into the, with this new system, everything has to be done on the computer.
Right.
And I'm not really good with a computer. So,
yeah, I hear you.
So I
apparently I'm not very good with the phones, I can tell you, because tonight we got this.
Yeah, I almost hung up on. I almost hung up because I thought I lost.
Oh,
but,
I'm glad you didn't.
But anyway, I'm currently laid off right now. I'm a heavy equipment operator, but when I can get into the unemployment system, and when I put my Keystone ID and all that in, I can only get so far, and then I get a message saying that there's another account with my Social Security number, and
yeah.
I've been to Representative Galloway's office. They've checked it out. Said there's no fraud involved, and
right.
But the thing is, I can't use the system because there's something
right.
wrong. And every time you call unemployment, when you can get a hold of them, that they give you a ticket number, and then they pass
yeah.
it on to a technician, which you have to wait. I don't know how long yet. I mean,
oh,
I've been
forever.
Waiting since
yeah, I know.
Forever.
Yep.
So that's
all right, so
that's my problem. And what
yeah.
I mean, the old system, somebody you could call unemployment and they would bring it up on the computer and solve
yeah.
your problem right there.
Yeah.
Now it's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, so we can still help you, Paul. What I'd like you to do tomorrow, okay, after 9 o'clock when our office opens, I want you to call this number, 215-489.
Hold on.
Yeah, yeah. Take
one
your time.
Second.
Tell me when you're ready.
215.
Yep, 489.
489.
5,000.
5,000.
Okay. And I want you to, when you call, ask for Dan Fagan. Okay.
Dan Fagan.
Yep. Dan has been kind of our unemployment expert in the course of the last 2 years since the pandemic started, and we've had a lot of these issues, obviously. And he can get right on the case for you, okay? I will check with him tomorrow by midday just to see, you know, whether he's heard from you and what the status is and where things are. But we'll stay on top of that, okay?
Thank you very much for your time. I'm glad I was involved in the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you stayed on the line. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. So, again, dial zero to be connected this evening to our telephone town hall. Dial zero. And let's see who we have on the line next. Looks like we have on the line now Vince. Vince is on the line. Vince,
hi,
this is Steve Sanisero.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. I'm well. Thank you. First
yep.
of all, I want to commend you for taking these questions and doing a Q&A. And actually, my comment and question actually relates to that.
Sure.
So as you know, in the various school boards, including my own, Central Bucks, there's
right.
a lot of vitriol going on in these school boards. And,
right.
And one of the reasons I believe this goes on is exactly, they don't do exactly what you're doing. There is no provision from the state law structure to ask questions in a live format and receive answers and get these things memorialized.
Right.
And I think this leads to, this is not a partisan issue. It's not even a
right.
specific, you know, issue even in itself, right? I think
right.
it's a transparency and accountability issue. In fact, this is what I find so outrageous.
Right.
In order to obscure people's comments, the words are not even put in transcript form. You can't even submit, you know, beforehand a transcript of what you're going to say and put it as part of the record. They're stored as audio. And this is to prevent Google searches, you know, of what happened during these meetings and the comments that were made. I mean, it's really an indecent, undemocratic situation where you've got superintendents making as much money as the vice president of the United States in my own school board, Central Bucks, and they have to answer no questions on the record at any time. And that goes with, you know, even the school board members. I mean, and this is really a fundamental reflection of what the state law is. And so this is a sort of the lowest common denominator is that they take comments, and that's it. It's outrageous, and I believe this is part of the frustration, the public, whatever the issue, whatever the politics, is feeling on this. And would you support reorganizing this issue the way this is? To just simply allow Q&A and accurate transcripts of comments and questions.
Right. Well, I can certainly take a look at the school code and see where there might be things that we can change about that, and we can look at perhaps proposing legislation to address it. I can tell you, I was not a school board director. I was a township supervisor where I live in Lower Makefield. And we used to allow, you know, for public comment, you know, general public comment and then public comment on every issue that came in front of us. And there were no time limitations. People came in, they could ask, you know, as many questions as they wanted. And, you know, we tried to respond as best we could. And there was a record kept of all that. There were minutes created of the meeting. It wasn't necessarily a verbatim transcript, but the reporter for the township always kept a basically minutes, a summary of what was said. So there was a record that you could go back to. To the extent that doesn't happen at school boards, it's the kind of thing that should happen. Now, if you have a meeting where you've got 100 residents coming in and they all have questions, you know, if every question is going to be answered, obviously that can make the meeting very long and make it very difficult to get to agenda items. But when those types of meetings happen, typically it's because there is a specific issue that has arisen that, you know, is a unique issue and has stirred a lot of public interest. And in those cases, really what ought to happen is the boards should have special meetings to accommodate the public so that the public has an opportunity to do what you're saying, which is essentially fully ask their questions, have answers provided to the extent that they're available. And I say that only because there might be situations where reasonably the board would say, well, we have to get back to you on that particular issue because we might not have an answer tonight about that. But the public should be given that opportunity, and clearly there should be some kind of a record kept of what the questions were and what the answers are. Now, the good news is today, of course, we have video, and a lot of times the video is kept on a website, so there's always a record in that regard, even if there isn't a transcription on paper. But giving people that opportunity, I think, is really important. So I'll take a look at the school code, see what is required right now, and see whether there are proposed fixes that we can ask. So, but stay in touch with my office about that, and I'd be happy to have further conversation with you about it. All right, so we're going back to the lines now. Again, dial zero, and next up we have Dan. Dan, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks for taking a moment to speak with us. I have a...
Sure.
A short question, but it's open-ended, so feel free to answer it
sure.
The best that you believe. There's a lot of issues facing the country and the Commonwealth right now, and I'm just curious, in your opinion, what are the top legislative priorities for the upcoming session? In your opinion, what are the important legislative items that would be helpful to us in your Senate District 10?
Sure. So thank you for that question, Dan. So it's an important one. You know, first and foremost, I think we have to make sure that, you know, we're providing for public safety. That means a number of different things. It means making sure that, as we had earlier this evening, a local firefighter, a volunteer firefighter, to make sure that our fire companies and EMS units are being adequately funded, and that the police have the resources that they need. We need to make sure that our infrastructure is being maintained. We had that discussion before about road repairs in the 10th District. And investment in education continues to be one of my priorities, because we really need to make sure that our school districts have the resources they need to be able to, provide the best education possible to our kids. You know, during the pandemic, some of the shortcomings were exposed, particularly for those districts that didn't have the wherewithal to have kids learn remotely. There were some districts that did not have connectivity. The kids didn't have laptops or any way to connect, because not every family has computers at home. I know, you know, many of us think that's unusual in this day and age, but it's the truth. And so we have to make sure that our schools have the resources. We have to protect the environment. I mean, that is a fundamental thing as far as I'm concerned. I know many people in our area, and particularly in Bucks County, care deeply about the environment. It's one of the reasons why I urged my Democratic Senate colleagues to intervene in a lawsuit in federal court about the current fracking ban in the Delaware River Basin. You may recall about a year ago, our Republican colleagues initiated a lawsuit to overturn that ban that was instituted by the Delaware River Basin Commission. It's been in place for about 10 years now. And it's important because it protects the drinking water in the Delaware River from potential contamination from fracking chemicals. We intervened in that case at my urging, and we prevailed in the federal district court. The case is now on appeal to the Third Circuit in Philadelphia, but I believe we're going to prevail there too. And again, it's important because we need to protect our drinking water, one of the most fundamental things that we can do. So environmental protection is critically important, and that includes, you know, passing legislation to increase renewable energy here in Pennsylvania so that we can do something about global climate change, which is a serious, serious problem. It's happening, and obviously as we see these more extreme weather events, we know that it's having an impact in our communities. This is not some abstract idea at this point. It's real, and it's happening. So those are some of the things that I would would continue to focus on throughout this coming year. Obviously, the budget process is about to start in Harrisburg. The good news is that our revenues are coming in very strongly, and we have, you know, as I said earlier this evening, $7 billion in reserves thanks to the American Recovery Act. So we have some opportunities to make investments that we ought to be making, and those investments should impact the entire state, but also our little area of it back home in the 10th District of Bucks County, and I'll be fighting for that as we move forward. So thank you for that question, and I think we might have time for another couple of questions this evening. Again, dial 0 to be connected, and I'd be happy to answer your questions. So next on the line, we have Frank. Frank, you're connected. Go ahead. Hello, Frank. Are you there? This is Steve Santasiro, and Frank, are you connected to us this evening? Okay, not hearing you. We're going to go on to another caller. Again, please press 0 on your phone, and you'll be connected this evening. 0 on the phone, and you'll be connected tonight. I want to thank all of you who have participated so far. It's been a good discussion. As I said at the outset, if you're not able to get through tonight, because we only have an hour and we're coming up on the end of our time together, just stay on the line, and you'll be able to ask a question after we finish, and we will get back to you in the next few days. Or you can always call my office. My office, of course, and there are two numbers for my office. One is 215-497-9490. Again, 215-497-9490 or 215-489-5000. Okay, who do we have on the line now? Looks like we have Andrew. Andrew, you're on the line.
Hello, Senator Steve. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Andrew. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Since 2020, I've been employed by the state of Pennsylvania as a liquor store clerk, and in July of 2021, the governor rescinded the mandate for everyone to wear masks and social distance.
Right.
Now it only applies to employees. No longer does it apply to customers.
Right.
So at that juncture, I had a meeting with all the employees at the store where I was, and they decided that they should go on strike. But that didn't happen because the management threatened discipline.
Right.
So I started looking for another job, which I haven't found, but I did resign in right after Christmas of 2021, and the reason was partly because of customers were coming in who are not wearing masks, and I felt that was a safety hazard.
Right.
And also another reason, and it's, a lot of people have been resigning, and I think another big reason is low wages. So the liquor store industry makes a profit of hundreds of millions of dollars,
right.
And a lot of it is distributed on the high end and not on the bottom. And that's
right.
Another reason why there's a labor shortage. And that's what those facts that I wanted to relay to you, Senator.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you for that, Andrew. I appreciate it. Look, this has been, obviously with the pandemic, it's been very difficult, and public health officials at the state and local level have been doing their best to try to make sure that we are all doing what we can to protect ourselves and protect others. And obviously masks have played a pretty critical role in that, particularly before the vaccines were available or widely available for folks. Of course, now that we have the vaccines, it's important that we get as many people vaccinated as possible. However, with a variant like Omicron, which is obviously very highly transmissible, even if you are vaccinated, you could still potentially transmit the disease, even if you're ultimately asymptomatic. So at least until the Omicron wave completely subsides, it is a good idea in public for folks to wear masks. To continue to do that voluntarily so that we can kind of prevent further spread of the virus. And I think, you know, when you go into a state store or to a grocery store or wherever else, just out of respect for, you know, people like Andrew who may work there, you know, it is a good idea to wear a mask or at least observe social distancing. So, you know, hopefully we will get to that point in the not-too-distant future where we're past Omicron and the numbers, COVID transmission, really come down pretty substantially to the point where there won't be as much of a risk. And as I said at the outset of the call this evening, the numbers have really come down pretty significantly just in the last couple of weeks, as most of the experts forecasted that they would. And so hopefully that will continue and we'll be able to, at that point, you know, get past these issues once and for all. But in the meantime, you know, as a courtesy and to protect yourself as well, it makes sense when you're indoors in a public space to wear a mask, unless obviously you're sitting down to eat, and then obviously you have to take it off for that. But otherwise, just to try to be as careful as possible about that. Okay, I think we have time for one more caller, and we have Frank on the line.
I am so sorry. I didn't mean to disconnect on you a few minutes ago. The
question
okay. I had...
Yeah.
The question I had, sir, is
yep.
What is your position on term limits for local electors?
Yeah. I mean local
like
officials as well as state
yes,
officials?
Yes, officials.
Yeah.
As far as like the mayor's position, we've had a mayor that just got reelected for another 4 years. By the time he's out, he'll have 29 years in.
Yeah.
And I just want to know what the position on that. Is there anything in the
Well, you know, generally speaking, Frank, I support term limits. You know, the question is, what is the appropriate limit? You know, I know a lot of people say, well, listen, you know, voters can always vote someone out of office, and that's obviously a term limit. That is true. But it's also true that, you know, there is power in incumbency, and when someone has been in for a long time, they can – you know, be reelected many times over. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that, including the fact that that person might be doing a good job, and that's why the public likes them and continues to vote for them. So, you know, I think it's something that, you know, case by case, it's obviously, you know, you might have different feelings about it depending upon who the person is and what the position is. You know, generally speaking, as I said, I support term limits, but I think we have to look at, you know, for every office what the appropriate term should be. One of the things we should definitely do, especially at the state level, and I would say this is true for the U.S. House of Representatives also, we have to do away with these two-year terms. You know, it's, you know, I was in the state house, you're running every 2 years, and you're almost constantly running for office, and that's really not what I think anyone intended when that system was put together. As a member of the state Senate, I run every 4 years, and I'm in, you know, my first term now, that just completed 3 years in office, so I'll be running again this year. 4 years is a decent amount of time. It gives you some time to do some things and really acclimate to the job, and I think that's a good amount of time. And then, you know, if you had a term limit of a few terms, you know, for that would probably make sense. But 2 year terms, they're just too short. And so I think doing away with 2 year terms, perhaps making them four, and having some kind of reasonable limit with that is an approach, at least at the state level and probably the federal level too, that would make sense. As far as local offices are concerned, you know, I have to think about that and think about what might make sense in terms of potential limits. But thank you for the call, and thank you for your persistence, Frank. I'm sorry that you got disconnected before. All right. Well, we are at our hour now, so we're going to wrap up. Again, if you have not had a chance to connect tonight and ask a question, I would ask you stay on the line and leave your question behind, and we'll get back to you. You can always call my office. Which at the numbers I'll give you once again for our Newtown office, which is our main office in the district, is 215-497-9490, or my Doylestown office, and that number is 215-489-5000. And, of course, you can always visit my website at www.SenatorSteveSantaciro.com, and we're happy to connect with you that way as well. There's always a lot of information on there. Check us out on social media, Facebook and Instagram. We're usually posting updates there as well. Once again, thank you for the time tonight. I'm sorry we had a little bit of a glitch midway through. And have a good night and stay safe. Take care.